You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Welcome to the show. This podcast is about creativity, the professional aspects of creativity. Well, you could also say it's about creative thinking. You see, a career in a creative profession typically means carving your own path and making a lot of important decisions alone. And when competition is fierce and the market's uncertain, getting firsthand insight can really help. Join me as I interview full-time creative professionals and ask them to reflect on these really important moments in their career. Each episode, my guests open up about significant and sometimes even subtle choices that have led to their success. I know it can feel lonely out there, so I hope you find their stories as inspiring as I do. That's the sound I heard as I walked to my interview. This episode was recorded in Sydney. I was trying to get the sound of the bells, but I've learned pretty quickly that Australian wildlife doesn't sit second string. I walked through Elizabeth Bay to meet up with David Baskin. He's the managing director of Pickett Studio. He invited me into his apartment and we set up pretty much in the middle. Looked like every wall pretty much had a window, so we were surrounded by sunlight. And we got started. And as soon as we did, I realized just how introspective David really is and how generous he is with his experiences. He's pragmatic, but in a poetic way. And he speaks from the heart, but it's in this really grounded framework. This is the kind of person you take advice from. Just a very thoughtful person. I hope you enjoy this episode. David, thank you so much for having me. I really like this area, this Elizabeth Bay
section.
It is good,
isn't it?
Yeah. And also, Sydney is proving to be just, I haven't traveled tons of places, but so beautiful, so lush.
You've got it at a really good time of year.
Yeah.
When the weather, I mean, it's always good, but when the weather's good, this time of year, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I know I always stick around. Everyone else goes on holidays. I really like staying in Sydney.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because it's... because no one around, it's empty.
Yeah.
You can park anywhere.
Yeah.
And it looks really good, yeah.
So where are you originally from?
Well, I actually grew up in South Africa, and I lived there. I lived on a farm with my family. So the farm was in the family. My grandmother was actually born on the farm, so it was in family for a long time. And then when I was about 18, the process started a bit earlier, but when I was about 18, my family immigrated here to Sydney. But yeah, originally I'm from South Africa.
How was that transition?
I found it pretty difficult. It wasn't really something I wanted to do. I wasn't excited about it at the time. As you can imagine, I was like 18. I just finished high school and I was having a pretty good time.
Mm.
And I didn't really know what it meant to move away. And I was like old enough to know that, you know, I was starting to think about what I wanted to do and not just following my family around. So I was like, considering staying, but I wasn't old enough to really know whether I was ready to do that or so. I kind of ended up coming with them, I would say.
So with that kind of start, how long did it take for Sydney to feel like home?
I think it was a really slow process for me. I actually couldn't really pin down a particular moment when I felt like that. So there was a long time where I really didn't love living here, but I probably didn't know that what the alternatives were. It wasn't sort of me going, oh, this is crap, I want to live somewhere else, because it's not crap, it's fine. I mean, you know, even in its worst form, it's like however you measure it, it's good, it's a good place to live. But I wasn't that happy here. I think I just, you know, it was a bit of a shock to the system, and you know, gradually kind of started to gain a bit more momentum and like it more and take more control of what I like wanted to do and how I experienced it and where I lived. And you know, now I would never, I love living here now, obviously. I would definitely consider living somewhere else if that opportunity came up, but I'm not kind of, you know, ready to pack my bags and go to New York to find out who I really am or whatever.
So like, so now on a contemporary mindset, like in right now, like what does Sydney give to you creatively or just professionally? Like the stamina, the energy coming from, like, what's it like to live here and work here?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose it's kind of hard to answer because I don't really have anything to compare it to. Like, with my life before was pretty different. You know, I didn't really live in a big city, but by the same token, I wasn't in doing any sort of creative work or any work really at all.
You're a kid.
I was pretty lazy, yeah. So it's hard to know. It's actually hard to know what the city gives you or the environment gives you versus what you're contributing yourself, whatever. I think certainly it is fairly fast paced, and there is a bit of a rat race in Sydney, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe more so than other big cities that I've visited, there's a little bit less, this is unsubstantiated, but a little bit less tolerance for difference. So it's quite conventional,
mm-hmm,
in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm, I think Australians tend to be fairly conservative,
mm-hmm,
not in a political sense necessarily, but in, you know, wanting the kind of normal things in life and stability, and home ownership is really important, that sort of thing. I don't like generalizing about this sort of stuff, but that would be my, if I was just going on gut instinct, I'd say that. So
just a snapshot.
Yeah, exactly. So I think those things do influence what you end up doing and how you approach your work and, you know, how people respond to you and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously the most important thing that Sydney's given me is it's given me a really good network of people that has been completely invaluable to my career. Like, I just wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for the people that I've met along the way. You know, mm-hmm, when I started out, it was all doing stuff for friends or friends of friends or, mm-hmm, you know, and that it's only really now in the last, probably only in the last year where I would be comfortable that the business's reputation without my own kind of network and people that I know would be able to survive, mm-hmm, on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's taken a lot of work. And it will get, it will become more so as it becomes more of a brand and it's less about me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's something that I would never have been able to achieve.
So you,
farm.
Yeah. So you went to uni here because you're saying, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what influenced your decision in terms of study and starting a discipline?
So I guess following on from the state that I was in when I finished school, when I moved here, thinking about what I was going to do after we moved here was just not on my radar at all. And I didn't want to think about it. So I kind of knew I had to go to university or I wasn't rebellious enough to decide, you know, I'm just not going to do that. It'd obviously been, you know, that was like my value system. And that's obviously what had been drilled into me through my family since I was young. And I wasn't like, I'm not a risk taker enough to go.
So it was a given that you were going to school.
It kind of was. And in retrospect, I probably should have taken a year off.
To gain perspective?
I think so. Just to like find my feet here as well. And who knows? I mean, totally impossible.
So you were uncertain about what discipline to choose?
Absolutely. So this is the way the system works here is you, when you finish school, you kind of get a ranking. So everyone in the country effectively is given a number and you can apply for a course if you get over a certain number. And then I guess it's in order of priority that they accept people.
Wow.
So the higher you are, the more likely you are to get into any course. And so I think if I'm remembering correctly, you choose a number of courses sort of in order of preference. If you don't get in the first one, then they calculate and see if you get into the next one and so on and so forth. So when I came over here, my South African results were, there's a formula and they converted them and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember what the four preferences were, but I do remember that the first time I applied, because I had to apply twice, computer engineering was the first preference. And then I'm sure the rest were like completely unrelated to that. There would have been like psychology and I don't know.
So this is a real roll of the dice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who knows what I applied for. Anyway, there was some clerical error. My application got lost. I had to reapply. And then when we were reapplying, or like my parents were, you know, helping / pushing me to reapply.
Yeah.
We remembered that during high school, I'd gone and done, I'd been to like an educational psychologist and done an aptitude test and, you know, sat there for 5 hours, like filling in all this stuff to try and figure out who the hell I was, which who knows whether that was it meant anything at all, but we remember him saying, oh, you know, he should do design because like all the indicators show that he's got the right mindset for a designer. So we're like, oh, design, okay, let's look up what, oh, there was industrial design. Oh, that sounds good because it sounds like, you know, like real design, you know, it's not just all fluffy stuff. It sounds like design is actually useful. I really didn't know anything about design or what industrial design was at that point. So I applied for that, got in. Okay, that's what I'm doing. That's who I'm going to be now. So that was the process, yeah. I think at the time, the university had just like doubled the intake for industrial design. So they'd increased the size of the classes for that particular course. So the ranking was much lower than normal, and which means like, because normally I think it was quite high. I wouldn't have got in.
I
but I got in that
answer.
Time.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
got really lucky.
So, I mean, because listening to you talk about, you know, you were mentioning previously about how your mind works and stuff, and it seemed like, in hindsight, that was the right choice because ID is so much about problem solving and then really thinking outside the box as to what material to use to get the job done. So did you enjoy it? Or did you, like, I guess what I'm also leading to is to the question about, like, you identifying with a role, with a title. Do you, did that help, or do you now currently identify with a role or a title?
No, because, well, no, I don't. I see myself as having learnt the design process, which I believe is a pretty fundamental process no matter what design you're undertaking. I think there are types of design that, you know, where the kind of dials are turned up slightly differently and emphasis is put on one part of the process to the other, but I do think fundamentally it's a pretty standard process, and I think industrial design teaches it really well. It's one of the disciplines where you're forced to be process oriented if you want to be good. You have to be. So I really had value in that, but I would never, like, it was very rare that I call myself an industrial designer.
Yeah, see, I purposely sort of asked you, like, phrase it that way about identifying, because I had a feeling you were going to say no, and I think it's important to verbalize when you don't, because I think all too often people don't fit in boxes, and I kind of just wanted to hear you kind of work your way out of that question, just so that it could maybe hopefully connect with someone else who feels the same and wants to know that, not that it always works out, but just that it's okay to roughly try to navigate through fields and not identify.
I feel pretty strongly about that. Like, of course, if I'd gone and done something really different, like, if I'd done law or something, then, you know, that might be a bit of a stretch to say I find myself doing what I'm doing now. Like, I think that design did end up being the right path for me. But I do think that there are many, you know, especially in what I do, you know, people have come from really different backgrounds. I think the thing that you tend towards when you study, if that's true, if that's honest, like if you're being honest with yourself and you're studying something that you're interested in, then that's probably quite important, but I don't think the path is rough, you know, and it was definitely for me, and that's fine, but I think that's true for most people that I've come across. Well, most of my friends, like, or contemporaries, I don't think I really know anyone who has taken, you know, that prescribed course to what they do now.
I think so much of the creative field is a blank map. I think other fields are a little bit more obvious, like medical field and law, and where if there's a precedent has been set or steps. And so that's one of the reasons I do the show, is because I think people need these landmarks from other people who've trekked the trek before them. And so I was wondering if you found people who think similarly. Like, you seem like someone who takes the time to study the way your mind works. Have you found a group of people?
Probably too much,
Not, I don't know, you're talking to someone who thinks that that's all well and good. Keep going. But have you found, do you find other people who think similarly, or do you feel kind of outside?
I probably feel a little bit outside. I've probably always felt like that, and that might just be, you know, that might just be my makeup, that I do think of myself in that way, and maybe I'm sort of playing down the fact that there are people that I think, you know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm minimizing.
Are you not seeking them out?
Yeah, well, maybe they're all around me and I'm kind of minimizing it because I still feel different, even though I'm exactly the same. You know, like, I bet all my friends would just say I'm completely predictable and I'm exactly like them, but I think I'm different.
Right.
I guess there's two sides to that answer. If I sort of start with design as, let's call that like the common thread that ties, like, I definitely have, you know, people that I'm close to or respect or get along with, there is a commonality of design with us. Like, I think there's definitely a birds of a feather effect there. Whereas, you know, obviously I'm exposed a lot to technology and IT and stuff in the work that I'm doing. At work, you know, we all get along really well and I respect those people. But I think when the clock's off, I do definitely gravitate more towards designers, I guess. So that's interesting, and I haven't really thought about it that much, because the other side to that question is that I've always felt like I'm an interpreter. I kind of understand design, but I don't have the confidence to say that I'm really good at it or that I'm I am a designer. Like,
I know what you mean. Yeah. I've done that in my professional time as well, where I think that is the mindset of an interpreter. You're sort of meant to have both feet on both sides in order to translate well enough. You have to be kind of living in both dimensions. Yeah.
And then I have like other feet as well. So I'm
kind of, how many do you have?
I think I have about five. And they're all in different camps. And that's what that's something that I do feel confident about. I can understand something and I can translate it for someone. Like, so being the outsider to everyone, but being able to give everyone else an insight into others. So that's...
And I think that's really great to talk about, because I think what you're saying is, like, I think all too often when people do feel outside, there becomes a lack of confidence that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think often if you're, you know, the expression jack of all trades, master of none is very, you know, off-putting. It suggests that that's not the way to go.
Yeah.
And so that leads to my question is, where did you get the motivation to keep trekking along this rough path when you did feel kind of outside in some ways?
That's a really good question. I think that I actually lacked that motivation for a really long time, and I felt maybe driven by external forces. And I wasn't really that happy in those years even. And it was when I could see a way forward, like I could take what I knew and turn it into something that I could build a job or like just get some money, or, you know, it started out quite small. I never really was thinking far enough ahead of having a career out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Something did eventually kind of bubbled to the surface where I finally took control of all the little bits that I knew and kind of put them together.
Do you mind me asking, like, literally, like, what age or what point in your life? Because I think
people are curious. I think it was probably about 10 years ago.
Mm.
You know, after finishing university, I'd kind of, like, fallen into a few different things. I'd ended up working in my father's company for a while, completely not a design role, unless you want to be really philosophical about what design is. But we
I don't have time for this. Yeah, the show's only a half hour.
Which was like, it was a very valuable learning experience. But I still felt like I was, you know, someone else was pushing the wheelbarrow.
I see.
And it was, I had like a bit of a crisis moment at that point. Like, I'd been doing that for a while. Things were going really well. Like, yes, it could have turned into a career for me. But it was like, this isn't me. I need to go and do my own thing. I don't even know what that is.
Wow.
So I just had to like stop doing that. And then I kind of tried to, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I can do graphic design. I'll be a graphic designer. I'll get some clients and I'll design stuff. I don't know what I'll do. You know, got a computer and like stuck it in my room and then just sort of sat there for 3 months, ran out of money, went back to work with my dad. So that was a failure, but it did change things a little bit for me, in that at least I'd tried to push that wheelbarrow a bit, and I wasn't strong enough to hold it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on I tried again and I had a little bit more success. I was a bit smarter about how I approached it so that I didn't put so much pressure on myself and it wasn't so high risk.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, as it grew, I got more confident with, I don't know why I'm using this wheelbarrow analogy, but...
No, let's go with it. I like it.
Okay, great. So I felt like I was the one pushing it.
Right. And that was part of the point.
Yeah.
You just wanted to, you wanted to feel.
Yeah. And so that was me feeling like, I guess, carving or assembling an identity out of my otherness. So all of the things that I was different about, kind of putting them all together and trying to, you know, A, turn that into something valuable that I could actually do something with. And probably be adjusting who I was to make sense to what people thought was useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see within your credentials of working with young entrepreneurs, and so you seem to have, I mean, it's funny, like the roughest, most unpleasant, unprettiest trips tend to have the best like stories and insight.
Yes.
I get the impression that you're quite passionate about this and you know, are doing this. What is that like working in that as the... whether it's being like in management or leadership or, but just to teach
I know what you're saying. Yeah. Look, I mean, it's something that I feel is pretty important. What's really difficult is when you're doing something which is new to you, it is quite hard to find people to ask, tell whether you're on the right track. Not only is it like, are they just not really around, but if they are around, for them to really get inside and see what you're, what really is the question you're asking is, you know, it's a huge ask. Like, it takes a lot of time. Everything's different. They've got their own problems to deal with. So it can be kind of lonely, a lonely road.
What I've noticed from my own personal experience is sometimes I'm hesitant to ask someone who probably has the greatest answer, but I'm afraid to look like I don't know what I'm doing because this could be someone in the future I ask to be hired by or collaborate with.
Yeah, that's really true.
The fear of looking like you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's happened to me as well. And also, like, I'm really cynical, so, like, I don't even think they know what they're talking about in the first place, you know? So, anyways, I really feel like, okay, I did learn and I have learned stuff. Whenever I find an opportunity, I kind of try and give what advice I can and make that, like, real advice as well. Like, not just, like, yeah, go for it. Like, that's great.
Right.
Because I think that's, like, everyone says, like, that's what your mum tells you, you know, what's the point of that?
So enthusiasm isn't your angle.
No, it's not my thing. No. I don't really do that. But it's something that I think is really important. It's actually not that easy to find opportunities and time to do that.
Right, of course. It almost becomes, I hate to say it, like charity almost a bit.
Yeah.
To stop what you're doing and then do that kind of enrichment work.
Yes. You know, even if it's like a 5-minute conversation with someone, someone might make an offhand comment at dinner about, oh, I'm thinking of... And I'm like, wait, stop, hang on. Like, what do you mean you're thinking of doing that? Like, let's... This is what I... You know, so I try to...
There's a lot of compassion there.
Forewarning.
Is there a theme to any of the advice you give? Do you find yourself sort of repeating yourself going, people don't say this enough, I need to say it?
Yeah, I think... I do think the... we were talking about this a little bit earlier before you started recording, but I think that there are a few kind of fallacies floating around, and it is like the grass is greener really is the way to sum a lot of them up. It's trying, like, I want people to be realistic about what they're about to do. I know that, you know, you kind of do need to have some blind optimism because otherwise you'll never do it. So the reality is, like, to some extent it's kind of better not to know about what stuff is going to be hard because then you might not ever do it. You might not take the risk, but it is a risk. And I think people need to know that if you're, you know, working for someone else, like having a job is something that's so easy to dismiss, especially like in a city like Sydney where you don't struggle. Like, you're never going to struggle to find a job, you know, like jobs are everywhere. The economy is really strong. It's a really like stable society. There's just like, there's no problems here. It's like a theme park of Western civilization here. So people can have like a bit of a blind spot about what they've already got, you know?
No, I know what you mean, because I think what you're trying to say is all too often people's slogans or logos or kind of like ambition for success is to like carve out on your own, go out on your own, not work for the quote unquote man.
Yeah.
And you're saying that
I think that's a myth. That's not enough. And you have to kind of, I think people need to acknowledge that that's a romanticized idea and be realistic about if they're going to do this, what are really the pros and cons about going off to, you know, are they willing to actually sacrifice those things? And, you know, people, because I think we shy away from that. So like, oh, but, you know, the security of a job, like, oh, gross, like security, I'm not into that. Like, I'm a free spirit, so, you know, I don't want security. That sounds crap. But actually, yeah, that's great, like when you're 25 and then... when you're 30, like, that's shit, you know, whatever.
I completely agree. I think that entrepreneurship gets over-romanticized and sold as this ideal, and that you're not being authentic or, you know, ambitious enough, or you're not really making a real impact or impression on your scene or industry if you're not doing it yourself, and like this whole, like, I'm not going to have anyone tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And team... collaborative efforts can really move 100%. Mountains.
And I think I absolutely agree. In fact, I think most good things come out of collaboration and teams and organizations. So I think most of the productive stuff that's been done in the world is groups of people doing stuff together, really, not individuals. But that's like, what's a group look like or feel like, or how do I relate to it? It's not natural to like, we naturally seek out the individual and value the individual more, I think. So this is getting pretty abstract. But what I like to try and help people understand is that they need to be pragmatic about things if they're going to go out on their own. It's going to be really hard. And they are going, when they come out of it, like I did, they're going to look back and go, hey, you know, having a job's not actually that bad, you know, depending on what you want.
Yeah.
And I think what it boils down to is the question of identity. So in the sort of search for the self, which is really important,
mm-hmm.
starting your own thing, and, you know, and that was a big part of it for me as well. It's like, who am I? You know, I'm not...
And also having an honest discussion with yourself about what success is. I tend to ask people what success yes. means.
Yeah, yeah.
And you might think that you're being an individual by saying you want to work for yourself, but that's actually kind of almost herd mentality when every creative wants that. I see what you're saying.
I really
you're,
like
you're really
that, yeah.
shedding some light yeah. on the other side, the dark side of yeah. the moon, the thing that people don't talk about. Yeah. And
it's fine, you know, and it's not unachievable, but the fact is if you want to be creative and support yourself as a creative person, you have to acknowledge the fact that what you're doing is starting a business, and it's no different from selling donuts.
Like, yeah, the business aspect, I think, really, people don't see that yeah. coming. That you end up being an accountant, and you're like, I want to do this to be a creative, not yeah. be an accountant.
Yeah. So you have to work out how to turn your creativity into a product.
Yeah.
And then you've got to work out how to sell and market that product. So that, if you're not into... If you were to swap donuts and creativity around, would you still be interested in doing it? Is kind of the question I want people
Ooh,
to ask themselves.
Ooh, I think that's really good,
yeah,
putting it that way.
Because you can be creative in a job, you know, I guess yeah. that's the thing.
Yeah.
You can have way more opportunity to really be a creative person if you go work in an advertising agency. Mm-hmm. But like, oh no, I don't want to work in an advertising agency, gross. You know?
Yeah.
My friends who have the most, who I believe have the most opportunity to be creative for the most number of hours in a day work for someone else.
Because I like the idea what you're saying is that if you just pick the cog you want to be, then you can focus solely on that without worrying about all the other cogs in the machine.
I think that's a really great way to phrase it. And the key to that is not being afraid to be a cog.
Yeah. Like as if that's some horrible thing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to segue because I love, before we wrap up, I really wanted to talk about, I get such a sense of your values and your consciousness in the projects that Pickett does. And yeah. so I just wanted to know like what really excites, it seems to be that consciousness excites you and quality and honesty
yeah.
and that kind of, those kind of values. Talk to me about
that. I think that's probably right. I mean, the projects that we do, this is an active choice. There's no agenda to them. So there are a lot of, like, I think it's quite common for especially smaller creative agencies to, you know, we want to do projects that help improve the world, in inverted commas, whatever that mm-hmm. means. And I think there can be a personal, you know, whatever, the director's kind of personal political views of the world or whatever come into that. I'm not really into that sort of stuff. So obviously there's some things that are kind of no-go zones, but it would come down to like, what are the people who work with me and for me feel about that? So if it's something that I think would be against their values, then I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
But I'm not going to make the company about being a self-expression exercise. So I want to help my clients solve problems.
Mm.
I don't want to get my political or whatever worldview out there.
Right.
As
it's
much
not
as
a
I
platform
can.
For
it's
you.
It's not a platform exactly for me to tell the world what I think. But at the same time, I think that I want to have a company which does bring kind of reward to the people that come into contact with it. So I want people to remember what it was like working with us and feel good about it. And that means producing quality work. That means like solving the right problems. And then the other thing is like I want to work with people that I like working with, that are like responsible, respectful, collaborative, can communicate well, and are kind of nice guys.
Mm-hmm.
So combining all those things, I suppose, so it kind of comes down to what's the sort of environment that I want to create
mm-hmm.
and be in every day, and who are the people that I want to surround myself with
mm-hmm.
and come into contact with, what do I think a good person is, and how can I work with more good people? And then, you know, hopefully that means I can support myself doing that at the same time.
But I also really like what I'm hearing is... the brand values of truly trying to get to the root of what a consultant is and how it's not
yes.
about you and like
yes.
and
yeah,
be
yeah,
a vehicle
yeah. yeah
and not an ego driven vehicle, like an actual vehicle that makes movement and trajectory.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think that's also a trap to fall in. Like, look, I mean, the reality is I'm not that sort of person. Like I'm not a flashy creative person who's got a high profile that people want a piece of. That is a different model.
Except this show.
Yeah, yeah, right. Okay, yeah, of course. this is the only, no, just kidding. You know, and that, like, that's a different thing. It's like someone who's got a name and a style and people want to buy that, you know, that's a product. I was never going to be that, but I don't believe that's the way to do things. So, you know, I think it's about being selfless and listening and understanding and then contributing what you know and I guess combining that with what your client knows. So it's important. That's another thing. Is like, it's very important to me to work with clients who know what they're talking about in their world.
I see. Because you're not going to do it for them because you're not trying to carry it. And that's why I really liked having you on the show, because it's such, you have a unique perspective of kind of shedding light on another way of handling it. Like, in a lot of people, creatives, want to seek that moment where they've identified their style and they're recognized and they're known for what they do. And that's a totally cool way of doing things. Yeah. And you're talking about another side, which is, you know, it not being about your image and just genuinely, like I said, being a vehicle and helping people get to another result.
Exactly. And I guess for me, that's maybe there's like some distinction between design and art there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think designers are facilitators more than creators.
Well, I think also another way of putting it too is I think that I hope in my, as I seek out guests, that I'm not being so literal that creative thinking means visual artist.
Yes.
Because creative thinking, in my opinion, creative thinking and problem solving are synonyms because it's creatively thinking, not...
Yeah.
Thinking art all the time.
I agree, and also, you know, I must apologize to visual artists everywhere, because I think the reality is that good work like that is just as much a problem solving and facilitation and listening and working with others exercises as it is what you know in the work that I do. So I don't want to.
No, for sure. Yeah. And it's the subtlety to all of that. I think it just sounds like you kind of fall more into the engineer camp where it's. It's just a different way of thinking. And that's why I was just really really happy to have you on the show, because you bring just a different perspective. And I want to reveal to people, an audience, that it takes all types.
Yeah.
And that this creative world is open to all types. And I want to encourage people and inspire people for the right reasons to get involved and pursue what they do. Yeah. So that being said, I really appreciate you having on the show. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. Absolutely. No problem.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.